Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. The final part of our panel discussion concludes with moderator Rachel Blakeman asking about manufacturing outside of Allen County. Gerard Williams from Blue Jacket will be the first to answer. Enjoy.
You've already hinted at this just a little bit, but let's talk about what manufacturing looks like outside of Allen County. So we know that Allen County has actually worked pretty hard to diversify its workforce, its employment base, and things like that. When we look to some of the outlying counties, we're looking at rather large numbers of people who still work in manufacturing. Would one of you like to address that?
Yeah, I guess I was going to add on since we were...
But
also with this question as well, the orthopedic industry as a whole, and it's huge here in Indiana, especially in surrounding counties with some global countries that are really top competitors. And that's something I want to add too, is that although when we were looking at the statistics that you shared with us, you know, GDP is going up, but we have less people doing it. Those are some of the strong manufacturers. If you had to assess around us in here, those are some of the strong manufacturers that aren't being replaced because what they make is so heavily and guarded and restricted and regulated and changing that you can't just send jobs off. So, you know, over the past 15 years, those are some of the types of manufacturers that have really been able to scale through. And for individuals getting into manufacturing, I mean, that's a really hot commodity, you know, to be in. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Traditionally, the manufacturing industry in Northeast Indiana was heavily automotive focused, whether it be in the traditional car suppliers or the recreational vehicles. A number of those and some of the more successful companies have made that transition from automotive to sort of that med device. And, you know, I think in some ways we are approaching potentially with the boomer population aging, there's an increased need for replacements and implantables and things like that. That may not continue to grow every single year for the rest of our lives in this industry, but there's no foreseeable drop off, at least for now. It's going to continue to rise at a pretty significant clip. And so a lot of those companies, I'm thinking of MicroPulse, which is in Whitley County. That was one group that started out doing automotive machining and manufacturing and made the successful transition to medical device. I think in some ways, some of our defense contractors who had done manufacturing and design, that's particularly in Allen County, but the ones in the surrounding counties made the transition to diversify from specifically feeding one kind of vertical to other, to trying to supply for other verticals. So I think that's sort of been kind of the opportunity for the surrounding manufacturers. It is, again, very heavily I'm thinking Noble County. It's the highest per capita employment in manufacturing of any county in the United States. So the number of jobs and payroll that's related to manufacturing is higher than any other place in the country. And they are largely related to some of those more traditional industries. So they do get hit in a recession. One thing that we've really found in Northeast Indiana, though, is coming out of recession, we've been a lot faster than other parts of the community that are other parts of the country that are heavy on manufacturing. But I think it's again, those ones that survived were, they're the advanced manufacturers. They figured out how to do it. CNA Tool and Cherubusco, they didn't lay off a single person during the recession. They didn't replace a lot of retirements. And when people left, they didn't fill those positions, but they didn't lay off a single person during the recession. It was because what they were doing was taking the reserves that they had built up and started investing in new materials, new technologies, a lot of that kind of 3D printing, composite manufacturing. They invested heavily in that and started training people that weren't, they didn't have the contracts for those people to work on, so they would train them in a new budding kind of technology. And now, once the contracts started coming back in, they're going gangbusters and can't hire. They just can't fill those jobs. So,
you got it.
Okay.
So let's start. You hinted at this, Ryan, about the economic recession. So as much as we'd like to think that the boom times will continue forever, history has revealed that that will not happen. So at some point, the economy will shrink again. And manufacturing is very much, especially on the automotive side, is going to be subject to those economic winds. So if you're in a situation where you are doing orthopedic implants and you're on Medicare, you don't care if the economy is expanding or contracting, you're getting that hip replaced next month. So is there anything that manufacturers can do to help buffer against that, or more importantly, the workers can do so that that way the boom times...
Skills.
Enjoy the boom times, but hopefully you're not going 6 months without a job as well.
Yeah, so a lot of that is tied to real-time supply and real-time production. Most manufacturers try to minimize the inventory that they carry, and that's why the transition happens so quickly, because they can kind of pivot and make independent decisions rather quickly and stop delivery. You know, when it comes to an individual kind of protecting themselves from the potential economic downturn, it goes back to skill development, talent, and credentialing. It's one of the things we all probably have pushed strongly, is to ensure that we have what we call the credentialed workforce. And that doesn't necessarily mean that individuals have gone to a four-year institution. Some of these credentials can be earned in as little as 3 or 4 weeks. But what it does is allows them to document their capabilities and makes them transferable and ownership of it outside of themselves. It's not me telling you, I know how to do this. I have a trade association industry recognized credential that can validate the skill set and knowledge base that I have. So from our perspective, that is the best way for an individual to try to prepare for that potential scenario, is to be a lifelong learner and be marketable. You know, don't burn your bridges. Make sure you have good references, all that kind of information. But specifically, be an expert in your field. Document the skill sets that one has and be credentialed, so that when that happens, there will be people who aren't credentialed. And when employers have a pick of the pool, so to speak, they're going to pick the individuals that they can document have the skill sets best versus others who don't.
Edmund, would you speak some about what some of those credentials look like, those certificates? So if we're not familiar with manufacturing, it sort of is like, what is this and what do they look like?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of them. You know, certified production technician is probably one of the basic entry level credentials. It just essentially documents that one understands the process of production and what it takes to be a production worker, particularly tied to like safety and ISO and those types of things. Lean, reducing waste is huge across any industry. So being either, you know, green belt, there's now I think is white belt is the lowest version of the belting through. So, you know,
I got the 4-hour class.
White belt through black belt certification, lean manufacturing, CPT, which is certified production technician, MSSC, there's a manufacturing skills certification, welding, industrial maintenance technicians. It runs the gamut, honestly. And some of them are industry specific or they're employer specific, so they're not necessarily an overall trade based certification, but even being certified on a particular production machine, like a Mazak machine, there's an OEM certification that one can earn to show I know how to work this type of machine. So even those types of credentials would be beneficial, you know, for one who's looking for employment.
And are we seeing those being trained on the job, or are they going to a training center for 2 weeks and then they show? How does that work? Who pays for it? What are we seeing in that area?
So to answer the first question is both. So some of it happens through training providers, and then some of it does happen through on-the-job experience. Our company, through Work One Northeast, the Work One centers throughout the region, actually supports individuals going into training to be credentialed to be a viable contributor to the workforce in these types of fields. There are some that are better suited for on-the-job training opportunities, just because there's various reasons. Some of the information is proprietary. Some of it is just the inability for education to keep up with industry. It's very easy for industry to go buy a new machine. Well, your average training provider can't afford to go buy a new $500,000 machine every 7 or 8 months. So sometimes there's not a training place that actually can demonstrate how to use the tools that are now into industry because technology changes so quickly.
Some of it's even one machine manufacturer to another.
Yep.
So if you have a CNC machine, there are different manufacturers for that that require different just training and know-how to operate a Haas machine versus another one. Mm-hmm. And so going back to how does someone prepare themselves, if they're working on a Haas machine, that's probably kind of the industry standard. Most places will have that, so that's pretty good. But
well, and even outside of that, there's 14 types of CNC machines. So, you know, it's not realistic to expect someone to go to a training for a couple of weeks and know how to work 14 different variations of
or
a machine.
Or for Ivy Tech to have 14 machines, yeah.
And would it be something where then if you knew how to work the Haas CNC machine, then the fact that you understand CNC machining at its core, you're going to then learn how to, like, which button is where and how you turn this one on and off, and it's probably a little different. But the functionality, at the end of the day, I would assume there's some transferability.
Yeah, there is. And some of it, for CNC specifically, it's tied to the type of or the number of axes from the dimensional setup. There's 3 and 5 axes machines.
You're getting axes, you may need them.
So yeah, it is definitely tied to functionality and also what kind of stage of function one is in. So there are literally classifications of machine setup and then machine actual usage, programming, and then the actual maintenance part if the machine were to break down. Like those are all different functions. And there's not a lot of people that know how to do all of them at the same time.
I'm quickly realizing that my law degree is completely worthless in the production. Jared, so I was going to speak a little bit about what you're seeing. We've touched on it a little bit about this hard-to-place population, but what is it that you're seeing from manufacturers and the groups that you're working with?
And I think it boils back to this last question that we were just answering, too, is what do you do? I mean, how do you buffer? And in some regards, some people aren't going to go into those programs and they're going to be graced by unemployment for a little while, which is what we do as a nation in those times to try to buffer it. So I guess there's only so much you can do. And for those who are out there looking and who are out there, the employers, you know, there's going to be a lot of this, you know, mismatching. But I think what I see with employers, they're thinking outside of the box, and depending on where they're at geographically, they might not have a strong draw from their central location because the population might be small. So they may be thinking, I'm in Warsaw, maybe, or outside of Warsaw, Columbia City, maybe I should think about drawing in more of my candidate pool from Fort Wayne if I'm not already. And how do I get those individuals there? And one thing that's been really successful for Blue Jacket lately is, and this is with, you know, lower skilled labor, of course, but helping individuals who don't have transportation, because there is a population here, a minority population who do not possess a driver's license or do not possess a vehicle, and something that CityLink and some of the other, you know, partners that we've tried to talk to, it's just not viable for them to aid these people to haul them out to a manufacturer. And that's what we've been able to do successfully, is arrange the transportation and find the people who would be good fit for some of these machine operator positions and get them there. And that's been huge.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, I've been seeing, and I'm sure some of you have, the Zimmer Biomet sign saying position starting at $17 an hour. And I'm seeing that just outside downtown Fort Wayne. So clearly they're needing to pull a labor pool from central Fort Wayne. They're obviously seeing there's some demand, and which we were not seeing in 2010 by any stretch.
Yeah, and some of those positions, that's very attractive when you're talking about somebody who doesn't have transportation and they can only think in a small radius of places that they would be able to work. They may be looking at a lower wage. So when they see $17 an hour, it does become worth it. And with a company like that, I'm not saying that you would move. I'm not trying to make people move out of Fort Wayne or anything, but they may start planning.
Well, maybe something where they want to sort of spend 6 months to a year, see if it's a good fit. And then if they're like, hey, I'm going to be with Zimmer Biomet hopefully until I retire, I'd like to have
a good commute.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Because the more important thing is they're staying in the region, right? So we will not lose them to out-migration. So that's important for us. What about, we've talked about some younger, so sort of that pipeline of 16 to 18-year-olds. What advice do you give to somebody who's sort of like, let's say 35, doesn't have credentials at this time, is sort of realizing, oh my gosh, this is it? I mean, so how do we get those folks skilled? What do they need to be doing?
Well, I think that's a great question. And it's something they definitely have been asking themselves, what can I do? And I think taking advantage of some of the programs that are through ANTHIS or even if it is longer term, you know, I know Ivy Works, I know this individual is supposed to be from Ivy Tech that is supposed to be here to speak. The Ivy Works program where they have people that are in there working with these 3D printing machines and the hands-on, they get a real sense of being able to learn something new, and it's not just going to be textbooks. It's a style that maybe they're more apt to enroll into.
My advice to them would be to stop waiting and do it now. There are multiple training options, some that can be achieved at no cost, and some probably upwards of $5,000 or $6,000. There are pre-apprenticeship programs, regular apprenticeship programs that have no cost to participate in. My advice to them would be to do it now, just because the market is ripe. When the economy changes, and it will, you can look back at historical data over time. When the economy tanks, everybody goes back to school. So, you know, the concept of credentialing usually happens during a bad economy. So if one is able to credential themselves, they put themselves at a very different place during good economic times, provided they were already at a level field with everybody else. So now is a very unique time. Even, you know, if they are employed, leveraging their employer. We talk to people all the time about, look, go get a job and then use your tuition reimbursement or whatever is available to you through your employer to credential yourself or skill yourself up, because employers actually look at those tools as retention tools, because there's usually some form of commitment tied to them. Or if it's a long-term program, they know as long as we're paying for them to go to school, they'll still be here working. So I would absolutely tell them, don't wait, because if you wait, you're going to be back in school with everybody else.
Would a one-on-one center be a good place for them to start?
Absolutely, that'd be perfect. Can I do a commercial for them? our office hours are 8 to 4:30, Monday through Friday. The center in Allen County is located in Rudisill Plaza, right on Rudisill and Clinton. But yes, we have staff there that can help people better understand training opportunities, also participate in assessments that will help them better understand their aptitudes, their interests, and values, so they're not kind of spinning their wheels and wasting their time going to training that may not be of their benefit for whatever reason. They're also well aware of what's applicable to the labor market. Like, the last thing you want to do is go get a credential or a job that nobody cares about, you know, because then you've paid for it, you've spent your time, and then you're going, but no one likes it.
Right, yeah. But don't train to be a telephone operator.
Right.
There's no market there.
Or that law degree.
Exactly.
So, yeah, like I said, the advice is do it. There's not many negatives to it, particularly in the short-term credential arena, just because it can be done so quickly and so cost-effectively. In some instances, the earning potential based on the credentialing is somewhat unmatched in our area of the country, too. I mean, I've literally seen studies, and I can't cite the source, so please don't quote me. But I can go back to my office across the street and find it. Of an individual who, if they were to go to vocational training, like an ANTHIS or an Impact Institute or something like that, get a job on average that pays somewhere between $17 and $18 an hour directly out of high school, based over long-term earning projections, will actually net more earnings than a doctor.
And right, because there's not the lost years of education.
There's not the huge student loans that they have to take out. And so, you know, the sooner you get started, anything that can compound, the sooner you get started, the better off you are.
And is there any cost to using Wharf One Center?
Absolutely not. It is free.
Okay. Yeah, so it's clearly not meant to sell you things.
No.
It's really meant to provide you with education.
Just time. Information. We do ask for time.
And there are a number. So Edmund and his shop, Northeast Indiana Works, a lot of it is federally funded through the Workforce Investment Innovation Act. There are also a number of new state programs being created through the governor's Next Level Jobs Initiative. So there are funding sources from both the state and federal level. And then there are organizations like Cuesta Foundation that does reimbursable or forgivable student loans. And they're moving more, they're moving kind of away, not away, but they're trying to expand beyond the traditional four-year student loans to some of those short-term credentials and two-year associate degrees. So there are opportunities to significantly reduce the liability for going back to a training program or even taking some time off to go do that training program through some of these other available funding sources out there.
And with that, I would like to thank our panelists, Jared, Ryan, and Edmund. Thank you very much.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. This panel can be found on WBOI.org, and links to the previous three UC2 panels are available as well. Thank you for listening and supporting this program. Our music is by Mark Waldeck. Folktales is next. Have a wonderful night.